What do you think it means to be a person?
I don't know.
Me either, really.
Go.
No. Say scratch that again.
Scratch that a fan.
I'm Caitlin Metz, a non-binary illustrator and designer.
I'm Rebecca Tossig, a disabled storyteller and writer.
And this is Scratch That, Parenting and Reparenting Off Script.
A podcast for people trying to parent and person at the same time.
Head over to our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast, for show notes and a transcript of today's episode. And also to join the conversation.
Thank you for being here.
Hi, friends.
Happy Monday.
Hello.
Oh my God. We have Amelia from many things. Off the Grid, Softer Sounds, the person who has been editing our podcast until now. I found Amelia. You did an episode with Cody Cook Parrott on Common Shapes ages ago. And I found you there. And then I found Off the Grid and was like, obsessively listening to that, and I found your Leaving Social Media Toolkit and the 100 Ways to Share Your Life and Work Offline, which I returned to over and over again. And I actually just saved it on my Notion, but would routinely lose it. And so I would go re-sign up for your newsletter to get the link, which is very silly, but that's how much that I love and use it. So when Rebecca was like, do you want to make a podcast with me? I immediately was like, yes, and I only want to work with Softer Sounds. And so that is how we find ourselves here. And we love you so much because you are so ready for a hard conversation. I feel like I have learned a lot about just how to talk about money from working with you. And just the way that you move through editing podcasts and talking about that is so special. But we wanted to note that because money is difficult, we're actually pausing working with Softer Sounds to edit the podcast. So the audio may sound a little different, but Rebecca's partner, Micah, who is a musician and audio wizard person.
Audio wizard. I don't know if he's going
to. Well, we love Micah and we're so grateful that he is jumping in to help edit this while we are still getting this thing off the ground. And then in the future, we hope to come back and work with Softer Sounds. But for now, we're going to be a little more scrappy.
I mean, that's exactly it, right? And when Caitlin mentioned Softer Sounds, I immediately Googled and went online. And I don't know if it took 2 minutes to be like, oh, this is a unique space. And I think what it felt like was in a world that is so snappy and efficiency forward and market, and kind of stripping the humanity away from the experience of making things. And it felt so clear that what you are about, it just felt like this really honoring of the human experience. And that showed up in a few different ways, honoring and having almost reverence for the human voice and not letting AI technology take over what it's like to edit and create that sound. But also in just sort of, it seems like your business practices of human bodies move at different paces and honoring the limitations that bodies have. So all that to say, I think our audience knows we love you and admire and respect you. I think one of the things we were really excited to kick off with this interview is to hear some things we don't necessarily know about you yet. And we always start our interviews by asking about the little version of you. And so if you wouldn't mind sharing with us whatever feels comfy about little Amelia and what you would like us to know about.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you both for having me. Thank you both for inviting me to support the launch of Scratch That. And I just want to say that you definitely are seeing all the things I have been trying to share about Softer Sounds. And I think that every creative project has its own journey. And it's a joy when we can work on them together and also when paths diverge a bit for a time. So I'm thrilled to be here to have this conversation. And I'd love to tell you about little Amelia, who in fact was called little Amy. That's what my parents called me growing up. So my given name is Amelia, but I was called Amy and went by Amy through college, actually, and then shifted and chose to go by my given name when I went to grad school. So when I was a little kiddo, I remember being, I don't know what my parents would tell you, but I remember being very chatty and very headstrong, and I think also very sweet. I used to go around my house and gather all the adults and bring everyone into the living room and sit us on the couch, and I would apparently say, "Let's chat," and I would just ask everybody Aww. To chat with me. So I was a really loquacious kid, and I feel like that plays out and now what my career is, and sort of like having conversations, editing conversations, this love of the voice, this love of sharing and telling stories. And I think that it's funny to look back. I don't know if other people feel this way, but I have a very poor memory. I have one or two vivid memories from my childhood. And so I pore over photos of myself in my childhood. Like, I am the person who's at my parents' house, like, sort of stealing the photo albums, or my mom's like ready to like throw out, you know, the whole giant box of negatives and things. And I'm like, what if I just take what if I just keep those? Because I don't remember things very well. And so I've learned a lot about myself by going through the photos. But a few of like the memories I have are the stories that my parents have told me about myself, all center around this sort of like friendliness, chattiness. And then I pretty quickly was like a very headstrong kid. I loved to read. I loved to lead. I loved to kind of like be the first one in the room and the first one at the head of the group on the walk or the field trip. And that kind of came pretty early in my life. So that's little me. Maybe all you actually needed to know is that I'm an Aries sun, Gemini moon, which explains all of those traits. But yeah, that's little Amy for today.
Oh my gosh, I can totally see the you in little Amy and the little Amy in you. If I had a kid that brought me into the living room and said, "Let's have a chat," I think I'd fall over dead with joy. Like, that's all I want. That's all I want.
What a dream. Okay, so little Amy was like wanting everyone to chat, was pulling people together, was the leader. How did you go from that to creating and building your like platform or your work, the things that you're making work about? I mean, you make things about so many things, which I just like adore about you, but specifically about existing off of social media. So like, how did you get to the place where leaving social media felt important, and why is that what your work is built around?
So it was a very circuitous path, as you know, all life paths are, right? Who takes a direct path from their childhood into their mid-30s? None among us. Well, maybe some. So that little Amy that I was always very precocious. That's definitely a way people would describe me growing up. I was very intelligent, very headstrong. I liked to tell adults things that I thought were true that they couldn't see, which I'm sure was incredibly annoying. And some of them told me that. So I think that as I grew up, I loved school. I was like a weird kid. Like, I loved it. I would get out of school for the summer and I would play school at home. And so that eventually led me into grad school. I did a PhD program in philosophy. Like, that love of school and excelling at school really took me far. And while I was in grad school, I was living in Chicago and really let myself just like follow my creative interests. I made a ton of zines. I started DJing with a community radio station. They taught me how to podcast. That's eventually how I started podcasting and what led to Softer Sounds. But through that time, I mean, we're talking about the peak Instagram era here, because that would have been 2013 to 2019. So, I mean, I'm speaking to two people who built very prolific careers on Instagram specifically during that time, right? And I wanted to be you all. Like, I wanted to be you. I was trying to share my work on Instagram. I was trying to grow a following. Like, little Amy, who liked to talk and liked to lead, like, really wanted to be seen and validated and affirmed on social media, as well as like through the work I was doing. So eventually that all led to a book deal that I got. I mean, I'm skipping a million steps, but I got a book deal in 2019 that was based off of republishing a book I had self-published a few years before that. And in the lead up to getting my book deal, I invested so much time and money into Instagram, because everybody told me, like, you have to have a platform for your book to succeed. my Instagram following was like 1,000 followers when I got my book deal. So they were all like, we got a 10x this, we got 100x this. And I was like, okay. So I hired a social media strategist. I hired a photographer. I hired a friend of mine to redo my brand and my website. And by the time the book came out a year or so later, I had almost 3,000 followers. I had like done a lot of work. I had, you know, put in all of this time, money, energy, all of it. And the book came out and it did fine, but it didn't do great. And I was so burnt out. I was like exhausted from how much energy it took to sell this book on social media. And right around the same time, I was working a job that was like supposed to be my dream job, but truly also just like depleting me energetically. And I realized I needed to make some like big changes in my life. And so one of the changes that became really clear is that I wanted to get off of social media. I wanted a different type of career. I was tired of like trying to be an influencer, trying to get people to care about me on this app where it felt like the algorithm there did not at all care about me, like I was fighting against it to get people's attention. And so I realized I had this horrible relationship with the app. It was very codependent. It was very anxiously attached. I'd post things and then check it obsessively. I spent so much time there panicking about why it wasn't growing. And that was just a dynamic I had to get out of. So I decided to leave social media. And then I decided to leave my job and start my own business. And when I went through that process of starting a business without social media, people were really like, had a lot of question marks for me. They're like, how'd you do that? How'd you do that? I often like to joke that in the span of 12 months, I got my PhD, published my first book, moved to a new state, adopted 2 dogs, and got engaged. And the only thing anybody asked me about was how I left social media. Like, nobody cared. They're like, oh, your whole life is radically different. Who cares? How did you get off Instagram?
That is so telling.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Wow.
Okay, we have to dig into this because just as you mentioned, like, Caitlin and I have built a lot of our livelihoods and not just the livelihoods, although that in itself is huge, but also just like have benefited so much for a time creatively and personally by being in that space. And I think as you know, because you've been listening to us talk for the last several months, that there has just been this like great tension and like back and forth war that we've experienced. And I just keep thinking about how everybody wanted to know how you did it, because I think it speaks to like a war that a lot of us are in.
And how pervasive it is.
Yes. Like how deep in that, like, we don't know how to do this. How do we get out? Like, we want to, but we can't. Like that caught feeling, that torn feeling, and also that's where everyone is. I think it seems like that is where so many people are in that spot. And I think the unique branches of it for us are in some ways around like identity. And I know specifically for me, having a platform to represent an experience that has culturally been ignored or misrepresented for so long feels like important, powerful work. So like, how do you turn away from that? And also this like finding community and finding real life people. Like I went most of my life without knowing people who knew the experiences that I did in the unique way that I did. And there's so much power in solidarity. I mean, like, I feel like Instagram as a tool has like not just changed us personally, but like in the collection of the voices there has sort of permeated out into other spaces in powerful ways. Just in the last week or so, as I've been in my like peak, I can't stay in this space, peak, like I don't want to ever open this app again. I don't think most people are aware of Texas versus Becerra case that was filed in 2024, but nobody has been talking about until like the last couple of weeks, which is this lawsuit that is essentially seeking to make the Section 504 unconstitutional, which is like our foundational piece of legislation for disability rights. I found out about that on Instagram. I went immediately to check like mainstream news sources and nobody was talking about it. So like to see the power of that tool, not only personally, not only culturally, but also like politically and in these really tangible ways, is so hard to turn away from. And I, again, so here we are. We're not talking about your move or your book or your PhD. We're like, Amelia, how? I think we also see the flattening. I mean, like, in some ways, I feel like the very thing that I love about Instagram, that it's like allows people to tell their own stories, is somehow in this really weird, mysterious way, like flattening those stories again. And I don't know if that's algorithm or if it's like social, something about our brains and how we like mirror each other or something. But like the thing that I loved, which is like authentic storytelling without gatekeepers, is like now there's like this flattening in that storytelling, or like if we have to represent our identities as brands, and how does that diminish the very thing we're trying to do? So anyways, I guess the question for you is, if Instagram or whatever the social media app is, if that is not the space it used to be, if it doesn't offer us the things we need it to, how else do we do it? And or is it possible to stay and harness the good and limit the bad? I know you get asked these questions in a million different ways all the time, but as someone who I feel like knows both of us in a very unique way, how would you speak to that particular angst and turmoil and tension and what you see on the other side of that, if you see anything?
Yeah. First, I just want to like take a deep breath with all of us, I think. Like literally, I'm just going to like inhale.
It's not helpful to hyperventilate over here. I thought I was doing so much good work.
And we're going to let it all go. I laugh as I'm doing that, but I don't say it just jokingly. I empathize so much with how caught we can feel and how our nervous systems really get stuck in freeze around these questions. I think that it feels like a series of either or choices where both options are bad options. So I think that for me, what comes up here is actually just like some important myth busting, maybe. Social media companies are geniuses. And I hate to say it, but they have so overwhelmingly convinced all of us that social media is the answer to every question and every problem that we have. And so you want to buy a pair of pants? Better go look on social media first. You want to figure out how to get your kid to go to bed? Social media is the place you should figure that out. You want to get your news for what's happening overseas? Better look at social media. You want to get your news for what your neighbor's doing? Probably social media is the place to do that, right? Like it's become this space that we go to for every single thing in our lives. And because of that, it feels impossible to extricate ourselves or to do anything differently than that, right? And so I think that the degree of overwhelm we feel has to do with how much social media is doing for so many of us. And we are already energetically strapped from the state of the world. We are already exhausted. We are already feeling like we have no resources to do anything else. So how else could we go anywhere else to have those problems solved, right? It becomes this impossible double bind where social media is causing a lot of these problems, but the idea of going anywhere else to get those problems solved feels even more overwhelming than just going back into the social media soup of it all.
Wow.
It's really tough. And I want to name all of that because I want to start with like the empathizing piece. And then what I want to say is that is a myth. Like the feelings aren't a myth, but the idea that social media is the only place to get those things is a myth. And I'm so glad you brought up Texas versus Becerra, Rebecca. And I learned about it on the front page of my local newspaper.
Did you really?
Just last week. It's on the front page of the Lincoln Journal Star because there was an article about local students who would be losing accommodations.
Way to go, Nebraska.
I mean, it's not way not to go to Nebraska. The reason this is happening is because our attorney general is one of the ones that is doing this work.
So is Kansas. So is Missouri. But I guess it's way to go, Nebraska local newspapers. That's what I mean to say. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. The journalists are really trying to push back because also we have a lot of anti-trans legislation going through the legislature right now. And because 504 also includes gender dysphoria underneath its like protections, that people who are pushing this anti-trans legislation see it as the block to their legislation going through. So it's horrific what's happening. And also, just when you mentioned it and you were like, it's not in the news, I was like, oh, this is so fascinating because I'm not on social media, but where I learned about it was my local newspaper. But again, we're back in this either or problem, right? Because it's like, well, media is being defunded. Newsrooms are not what they used to be. They have no resources. So we think we have to go to social media to learn these things. But then also on social media, we see the rise of a lot of the political movements that are causing these things to happen, right? So again, it's that it feels like that trap. There are two options and both of them are bad. So what I have learned from every single spiritual teaching or intuitive work or healer I have worked with is just that there's always a third way. And that's our work as humans is to find it. Binary thinking is also its own myth. And everything in our white supremacist colonial culture is trying to trap us in either or thinking. It's trying to trap us in binary thinking. And so we have to find other ways. And there are other ways, and sometimes we have to create them. Sometimes they exist. So I think for social media, what I try to do with people is start by getting clear on what are the problems that you're taking to this app? How else might you solve those? So often we don't think of it this way, right? You don't open social media and think, what problem am I solving here? In fact, we've been trained to just open it for entertainment, right? That it's become this entertainment machine. But I think if we can slow down and if we can remember, and this is the work that I do in my book, which will be out this summer, hopefully, is like algorithms are built to solve problems. So we should be going to them with problems. So if I'm picking up my phone, what is the problem I want to resolve here? And can this algorithm help me do that? And most often, there's not a match between those things. Sometimes there is. If you need to get somewhere and you open your Maps app, that algorithm is getting you there. It's working for you. You need to get somewhere and you open Instagram, you're not going anywhere. You're just going down the rabbit hole of Instagram, right? So I think the first step is getting much more clear about why we're turning to the apps, identifying like what are the actual problems that I am trying to solve or solving here, like how I get my news, how I keep up with photos of my family. You know, there are real utilities that these apps have for us. And then we can start to weigh that against how the apps make us feel. So at that point, it's like a pros and cons list. It's like, okay, I'm looking at the problems. How well does social media solve these problems? What else is happening when I'm on these apps? And do I want to start to divest from them? Do I want to take myself off of them? Do I want to step back or away from them? Do I want to only use them for one thing instead of for all of these things? And we can start to make more strategic and honest choices for our own needs. And so I think that's the beginning of the process. That's like where I start to answer your kind of stack of questions.
Okay. Interestingly enough, I literally feel like an ease in my chest just writing those notes down. Because like part of it is that what you're saying are things that I already know to be true. Like there are not just two choices. Binary thinking is a myth. There always is a third way. Like, of course, like, how do I forget that so easily or get caught up in this very rigid black and white frantic feeling? So thank you for naming that. I was also, as you were talking, I don't know, this might have been me listening to an interview that you've already done. So tell me if this is an idea that you've already shared, but I feel like I remember somebody that piece of it that's like, what is it that we're going to this app for? And like, what is it giving us? And are there other ways to find it? As someone who has like, in a lot of ways, built my career on that app, I think a lot of it feels like connections, right? Like this is where my network is. And somebody recommended the idea of like going through who you follow and pulling out the people that you like definitely want to keep up with. And literally having like a favorites page where you can go through and click on their pages individually. It's almost like an old school Rolodex. It's so interesting because it's like, well, how funny that I like stay on that because I want to keep those connections, but I rarely even see those people when I'm scrolling. So it's like that disconnect between I think I'm going for this thing, but is it even giving me that? And how else could I actually get the thing that I'm trying to attain? I don't know. Is that you? Is that your idea that you mentioned, or did I hear that somewhere else?
I feel like many people I've heard share similar ideas. So I don't claim it as like my own, but I'm sure I've also said something similar. And, you know, I know, for instance, like Cody Cook Parrott has in the past shared like a Google sheet where on one of the times they were leaving social media, they like put in the names and links of everyone they wanted to stay in touch with. The example you're sharing feels to me more like a little like bookmarks folder on my computer.
I don't know. It almost feels like in some ways our brains are trying to manage or hold on to more than we are biologically, physically capable of holding on to. I think I follow like 1,800 people. I don't recognize 1,800 people. So kind of paring that down into something that feels actual and true and real, and then intending to fortify that connection. I don't know. It's a different way of thinking about it, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that something that social media gave us was this feeling that our social networks could be unlimited in size. And I think at first that felt so freeing, right? I can have a million friends. Like some people are listening and being like, I truly never, ever desire to have a million friends. But for me, an extrovert, I was like, oh, I want to know everybody. I love everyone. I loved that really expansive nature of it. It like made me feel like all of the limits on my community were like suddenly gone and blown open. But as we lived through that, what we learned is that there's a reason that communities have things like shared agreements or have things like ways to deepen ties, ways to communicate norms. And so actually, you can't be friends with every single person on the planet. That's not possible. And also, we probably don't want to. It feels like, I would just think we've kind of been on a cycle with this where it was like, okay, it feels so good to feel like we can open this up. And then also having a million loose connections is a very different thing than having 10 or 100 or even 1,000 close ones. And I think for me, when I left social media, I was very afraid of the loss of my acquaintances and even some friends, people who I only communicated with through stories or DMs, or, you know, I had so many people who I just like passively knew what was happening in their life all the time, even if we never really that directly communicated about. I mean, how many friends do we have on social media where our only communication is like emojis? Like we heart their story or we like send them comments. We comment on something with some emojis or a couple words. And I was really afraid of losing that because that attention really like affirmed so much of my identity and made me feel connected. But what I've learned since leaving social media, and I haven't said this yet, but it's probably helpful for people to know I've been off for almost 4 years now. So this is not like a recent thing. I've been off of all social media for almost 4 years, maybe 4 years by the time this is live. And what I found is I have more friends than I think I ever did when I was on social media. And I'm closer with all of them because we have to directly communicate. There is no more sort of like indirect broadcasting in my life. Well, that's not true. For a while, there wasn't any of that. Then I started my podcast and now there's a lot of that again. I have been on my own full cycle of like leaving social media, becoming more anonymous, becoming super private, and then like starting to create new channels for my work, growing an audience. And I'm back in the throes of like being in parasocial relationships with thousands of people again. But it's still incredibly different than social media because now it's through my podcast and my newsletter. And that's kind of where I'm at in the work. But I think most people are in their own place on the cycle.
Okay, I'm thinking two things. One, we have a question about podcasting. But before that, so I just want to put a pin in that. The way that social media helped you as an extrovert, Instagram specifically supported me as an introvert. So the reason that we even pitched this idea to you is I had an encounter with a parent at Charlie's school. This is the first semester that Charlie has gone to school. And so it's a new thing. It's terrifying. It's a whole like hellscape of navigating interpersonal relationships with other parents, which is like a nightmare for me. But there's a parent at Charlie's school who like seems cool, looks a little queer. I'm like, I think that I want to get to know each other. So we, after school one day, we took the kids to Botanical Gardens. It was great. We had a good time, but it was all of the anxiety of like new, like trying to talk. And then like, they would ask me about myself and I would be like, oh, these things. And then I would ask them about themselves and they'd be like, oh, these things. But it was awkward, as all I think first encounters are. After we left, within like 10 minutes, they were texting me and they were like, you like hid the lead, like you do all these cool things. I just found you online. And I was like, oh, what's your link? And so then we're live texting each other while looking each other up online. We're like stalking each other and texting each other about it, which was actually just so delightful. And I realized a couple things. I was like, I don't know how to talk about myself in public. I don't know how to make friends. It is incredibly awkward. And so in some ways I'm like, I want this thing. Like, I love being able to just like send someone a link and they can like see who I am. And they're like, if I don't like that vibe, then they just go away, which is like very comforting. And it's so much, I feel so much safer. And also I think that I don't know how to make a friend anymore, especially, not that I don't ever make friends offline, because that's not true. But in an awkward social situation, or when I just like want to cold make a friend with someone, I can't just like follow them for a while. I don't know. What I'm trying to get at is like how much it has supported me, how many nourishing relationships I have built on there. And also, I think it has removed the whole skill set, like the muscles that I have to like engage in public and make friends with people has atrophied. I was like, I think maybe I need to make a zine that's like, hi, you seem cool. Do you want to be a friend? Check yes or no. And just like carry those in my pocket. But that was the whole idea for this, was like, how do we make friends offline? Because it's so striking to me how like instantly I was so much more comfortable. We both were like, and it did accelerate us like getting to know each other as well. So like there was positives from it, but I also was like, this is fucking weird. And I want to address this.
I'm so glad you brought this up, because in my own ways, I have also felt and lived through this, even as an extrovert. When I was living in Chicago and like at the peak of growing my Instagram presence, I noticed the way I moved through the world was so different. When I'd go to an event or even a party, I just expected people to know who I was and what I was about. And I didn't do a lot of the work of introducing myself or having to tell people what I was up to. It's like people there would be like, oh yeah, I follow you on Instagram. How's your book? How's your cat? How's your whatever? It like becomes this sort of shortcut to relationship building. And I don't want to dismiss or denigrate that. I think that it definitely has a social utility in that way. And also, I think, Caitlin, what you described, like you're feeling both sides of it, which is that if we come to rely on that, we lose some of our skills of introducing ourselves or learning how to start a new conversation or learning how to figure out what somebody else is about if they can't just send us their Instagram, right? And when I moved from Chicago to Nebraska, it was really interesting, the like real-time learning I had to do about building relationships again, because nobody here knew who I was. And then I left social media like 6 months after we moved. So I couldn't just go like follow them and kind of expect them to passively figure out that I was cool and had more followers than them. Like, I will say this about myself, but I think it's more broadly true. Like, our social media followings are also how we signal our importance to other people. And so, especially when I'm meeting people in real life, you know, I want them to know, like, excuse me, I have a lot of followers. People listen to me. So you should listen to me too. And it is both a way of being like, let's connect, but also being like, here's literally the number that signals my social power and where I live in our social hierarchy. And that is a shortcut, but maybe not always the one we want to take. And I think that some of the experiences I had when I was still on social media and making friends that way was that people would approach me perhaps not so authentically, or they'd approach me out of a place of desiring that social power. They'd have a lot of opinions about me and my work before I'd ever spoken to them. They would project a lot onto me and what I was doing on the internet when we didn't have any sort of in-person relationship. So I think that that is more of the sort of shadow side of using the Instagram shortcut for relationship building, is that yes, it can help sort of ease the introduction between two people and making a friend, but also it can block a lot of relationships from ever starting because of what people come to believe from this like tiny snippet of what you're showing of your life online.
I've definitely experienced that as well, or like the amount of times that people greet me in public and know who I am is staggering to me because it doesn't feel like I'm that. I stopped sharing Charlie on social media because we were being identified at playgrounds because people recognized him from my social media. And I was like, holy shit, this does not feel safe for him.
Yeah, I live in dread of the moment that anyone finds me online. Like if I meet parents, I think for me, it's because I feel so much more comfortable writing something like deeply personal on my Substack for these like people I don't know that I would not share to someone that I just met, like a parent at auto school. And it's weird. It's a weird feeling to want to feel so open with all of these people and then not want to carry that into my one-on-one interactions. But Caitlin, can I ask a follow-up question about the playground?
Yeah.
I've heard you talk about that moment and like the awkwardness of it, but that was the first time I heard you talk about like this atrophied skill. And it made me curious about like, do you feel like that muscle was really, really robust before? Or do you think that your tolerance for the awkwardness was higher? I'm just curious in part because I think the idea of having a tool for something that doesn't come easily is not a bad thing. Like tools are neutral. And so it makes me wonder if it's less about like building that muscle back up and more about playing around with the tools that you have to use it. I don't know.
This is so interesting. I was homeschooled till college. I didn't go to school till college. I did some like co-op stuff with a homeschool group. I was painfully shy and introverted. I was always the weirdo in the room because I was always the one in the long denim skirts who like didn't have their hair cut, didn't have a TV. I had no reference for any pop culture reference. So I was always a weirdo. I had like one friend through childhood. And then I went to college. I made a few friends in college. And then I got on social media and I started making and sharing work. And I started making really beautiful connections. You know, it was like 2015, 2016, like the beauty of Instagram. And I started following people. I started projects. I started collaborations. I like flew to Minnesota, like just to go stay with someone that I met on Instagram. Like there, I think I learned how to connect with people on Instagram. So actually, I'm glad you re-asked that question because I don't know that I ever had that skill of just like making friends with someone unless I was like put in like a school situation. But even then, like I went to grad school and it was like this very intimate, like it was like a low residency program and we would like come together twice a year. And when we were there, it was like so intimate and everyone was so close. But I like really didn't sustain any friendships from that. Like I didn't really retain any friendships. Yeah, I don't know that I've ever had that skill. And Instagram has been the place where I felt belonging. It's where I found people who were like me, who are like, oh, I didn't know there were other people who grew up in a cult. I didn't know there were other queer people who happened to have married a man. I didn't know, like so many of the people that I followed that I feel like gave me permission to imagine myself as a parent outside of the ways that I told what a parent was from Instagram.
It makes me wonder how many people are in that position, especially of our generation. This was this shortcut tool that we got to have. And now we're all like collectively reckoning with the backlash, the harms of that, and are like, but what other tools do we have? And is that part of the trap that we feel? which makes me wonder about playing with the tools. The zine you mentioned, like, what are the ways those, like, there is a third option, as Amelia tells us. This is not, you know, either or, like, friends on social media or no friends at all. But, like, what are our new tools? What are our next tools going to be?
Interrupting this episode to say thank you to everyone supporting the podcast on Patreon.
We love seeing your comments come through. We love getting to know each of you better. Like, you being there really means the world to us.
If you want to support the project financially, you can become a paying patron for as low as $5 a month. That's less than a latte.
But there's lots of free ways to support the podcast too. Sharing episodes, giving us one of those very pretty 5-star reviews, all of that makes a huge difference too.
And you can also join Patreon without paying. So the show notes will always be there for you. Okay, back to the show.
I always feel like in the conversation around social media, there are many different categories of people to talk to and through it with. But I always like to distinguish between at least two groups. One is like the people who are sharing their work and building a career on social media, and then people who are purely just like using it. Because often when I talk about social media, like to my friends or to my family members, like they're just using social media and they can start to understand how the algorithm is shifting their taste, shifting their habits, shifting what they buy. Like that's very real for everyone on the apps. But it's a different and distinct thing to be like, I am trying to grow an audience. I have a platform. My desire is for people to pay attention to me. Like people don't put it in those terms, but that's what we want. Like when we are growing a platform, we want people to pay attention to us so that we can utilize that attention for other things, typically, whether that be fame, which is not what I'm going for, but like, you know, I have a business. I like to sell things. I'd like to teach classes. Like, and so I'm growing an audience for that. So I think that when we talk about podcasting, like it's doing different things. I also think when we're talking about making friends, it really depends. Like, are you just a person who's using social media and so you need another set of tools to make friends? Because also, if you're a person who's just using social media, you're probably not making a ton of friends there to begin with. You are following the people you are already in relationship with, and then you are following content creators who you are in parasocial relationships with, and eventually you might buy their thing and become their friend. But it's very different than those of us who are the content creators, and we're always trying to connect with like peers and collaborators. And like, that's a different experience of social media. So I think it's important, especially for your audience, to pull that apart. Because for an audience of parents, many of the parents listening, I imagine you're just trying to like share pictures of your kid with your family and your friends. You're trying to maybe like follow some parenting experts who can help you figure out what's going on. You're paying attention to what Rebecca and Caitlin are doing because they're helping you parent in different ways and rewrite these scripts, right? So that's a different experience than somebody who is like building a platform or growing their audience here. And I also think like when it comes to our toolkit, there are so many tools that we don't even realize are tools for making friends or like that do the same thing that having an Instagram profile that signals all your values and beliefs does. Like, I think here of something like fashion. I mean, Caitlin, you even said it. The person you were talking to like looked like a cool queer parent, right? Like how we dress and show up in spaces signals to people what we care about. Like for a long time, people like denigrate the like, I love Planned Parenthood t-shirt or whatever it might be. But like what you're doing is showing up in physical space and signaling what you care about. And so I think that we can't undervalue that type of work. Like it's not just social media. You can leave Instagram and cultivate an amazing sense of personal style that tells people in the world what you are about.
We're making a new list of 100 ways to make friends off social media. And one of the top ones is cultivating your wardrobe. I am screaming.
I am too. I'm obsessed with this.
Dress for the friends you want to make.
Yes.
I mean, I'm joking, but this feels so validating in so many ways.
Yes, yes, yes. We are with you.
This is something that our communities have been doing for ages, right? Like queer communities cultivate a sense of style that tells each other like, oh, you can approach me. And sometimes that's been like fun. And sometimes it's been like much more covert, right? Like fashion has also been a way of signaling to people that we belong together, even if we're not allowed to be together, right? So I think that's just one example. I also love, Caitlin, your zine idea and, you know, putting a zine out there. Something I'm doing in my neighborhood to try to do this is that I've been building a free little library with my dad, and we're going to put it up in the spring once the ground thaws. And I'm going to make little postcards and hand them out to all my neighbors. You know, I have a pride flag in front of my house and it hangs there. And 50% of the time I'm like, is this just performative and weird? And why do I put this up? And then, like, the person who dropped off groceries for me this morning sent me a text and was like, I loved your flag. And I'm like, you know, people will bash on, like, signaling in this way. They'll diminish it as performative. And it can be. I'm not saying it's not sometimes, but also it can be really valuable and important. So I think when we're considering, like, what am I using social media for? Am I using it to, like, signal to the right type of person that I would like to know them? We can look at other ways to do that, whether it be putting a flag in front of your house. I mean, also, like, let's be real. When people put, like, Trump flags in front of their house, it signals to me that they are not for me. You know what I mean? So we have these different symbols and signals that we can utilize. It doesn't just have to be your Instagram presence.
But can we pause to celebrate everything you just said? I feel like that feels so right and good to me. Like, that feels possible. That feels hearty. That feels sustainable. That feels, like, grounded and connected. And I don't know, I'm just really seconding, co-signing those ideas.
I also feel like it was so useful for you to make the distinction of, like, who's listening. Because I do think that Rebecca and I are, like, nerding out with you about things that might be niche to us. But coming all the way back to the beginning of the conversation, you found out about that lawsuit from your local news. And a reoccurring conversation we've been having is, how do we engage with our local community? And I think, like, the little library that, like, Rebecca and I have talked about, how we've been trying to get to know our neighbors recently. And I think so much of this is, like, coming back to the small. And I think that is where maybe this conversation could be more accessible to, like, a wider, like, kind of framing it through that lens of that we're trying to come back to home, to connection, to who's right here.
Yes, that right here piece is what I'm feeling too. I think that's the word I like, that present. It's like tiny and present. Like, what is right in front of me? It is so strange to have 1,800 people that I follow on my phone and to not know who lives next to me. So I think it's that reorientation and that kind of, like, slow shifting and, like, looking up and around and like, what am I putting on my body? And I am really feeling charged up by these ideas.
I feel like something that comes up for me a lot around this is that, you know, I live in a place where there are not necessarily a ton of people that I feel a lot of affinity or belonging with, right? I moved from Chicago to Nebraska. I moved from a very, like, progressive community to a relatively or extremely conservative one, depending on who you're talking to. And I think many of us turn to social media because we feel like we can't belong where we are. And I understand that urge. And I want to affirm that. Like, I get it and I hear it. In many ways, being on social media is what allowed me to dream up and then go live a life that was bigger than the one that I was told was possible for me. Like, that is so valuable. And also, when I spend a lot of, well, I don't spend any time on social media anymore, but in my move here, I brought a lot of my, like, love and desire for the, like, super progressive leftist community building and organizing work I was doing in Chicago. And I, like, wanted to find it in Nebraska. But, like, in Nebraska, we're just, like, fighting for much more basic rights, respect, equality, right? I was so deep in even beyond, like, the equity work. And now I'm just back to the straight up basic equality work here. And it's really been a practice for myself of learning to belong where I am. Like, belonging is something that's such a gift when you just find it and it's so easy and it's, like, feels so good, right? Like, when you feel seen by somebody, when you meet and you click and it's amazing and you, like, fall in love with each other, whether that's friend love, romantic love, community love, like, that feeling is extraordinary. And also, many of us live in places where we choose to live for reasons that are important to us, but we may not find that sense of, like, immediate belonging. And that's where the signaling can help. That's where me having the flag in front of my house can help. Like, it can help me do that work. But I haven't found, like, the same sense of belonging and community that I had elsewhere. And yet I have not just, like, gone back to social media or only created an online life for myself. Like, I still keep reaching out. I still keep coming back to the local. And the reason I wanted to emphasize that is because I love what the work you all are doing about like knowing your neighbors and doing this. And I also think a lot of people will feel like, well, there's nobody around me that cares about the things that I care about. And I guess I'm kind of here to say like, that may be true. And we still have to build community anyway. And we have to find ways to get all of our needs met in different places. And that's the beauty of the internet and the beauty of this. But like, I still think there's a both and to it.
Yeah, I think when you were speaking to that move from Chicago to Nebraska, and I think what came up for me was thinking about disability and parenting and how I don't know a single person in my local orbit. I'm saying this cautiously. I don't think I do. That knows the particularities of that unique experience. And I know that there are a lot of online spaces that are specifically like support groups for those kinds of parents. And it reminds me a little bit, Caitlin, of what you were talking about before we hit record, is that what you're kind of doing with some of your clients and what you're talking about a lot in St. Louis is trying to figure out how to do both of those things at the same time, if there's a way, and playing with trying to pull out some of those unique pockets that really maybe can only be accessed through this digital tool in some way. Maybe it doesn't have to be Instagram. It could be something else, but like reaching across geography collectively together to meet in real time and also knowing our neighbors, being rooted in what's happening in the little place that we live.
So many of the conversations I've been having with almost everyone that I'm hanging out with in real life is, how are we engaging in our communities with people that we disagree with? And how are we building a relationship there? And I think one of the gifts of social media is being able to find people with stories similar to ours and to be able to see ourselves, like disability, parenting, queerness, religious trauma. Can I raise a child in a way different than was modeled to me? Those are like invaluable gifts. And also, we have wrapped ourselves in these cozy, cozy little echo chambers where we can be relatively free of suffering and discord and having to be in relationship with people who might be actively fighting against our rights. And I think the only way for us to move forward in any positive way is for us to be able to build a relationship with someone who disagrees with us. And I think we can only do that offline. I don't think that those are the conversations that are being had constructively on social media. There's not nuance. And I think that's what we were talking about. The podcast is, I talk about so many things here. Just since, what are we, like on episode 25, 26, I have shared and talked about so much of myself and my life and my ideas that I don't share on social media because it is a soundbite and I am very careful. Like I have not experienced like bullying or like meanness on the internet. And I have really carefully crafted the way that I show up there. I think that is why, is because of this like very little way that I've existed on Instagram. But here I feel like there's a safety. Also, no one's like commenting. No one has my like DM necessarily from this. There's like a layer of like wanting to hear what I'm saying for people to be here. And also like I can talk it through. Like I can correct myself. I can say a million words that like you just can't do on Instagram.
Yeah, I feel like that is one of the magics of podcasting. So after I left social media and then I, like a year later, roughly started Off the Grid and then have since started multiple other podcasts. One of the things that made me really acutely aware of is how social media was this like affirmation validation machine for me. And at first, podcasting felt so lonely and felt like nobody cares. Where are my hearts? Where are my notes that say this changed their life? like I really craved that like instant validation that I was trained to desire from my Instagram use, right? Where I like put up a picture and then it should, quote unquote, immediately get a bunch of likes. And then I would judge how good it was based on how fast the validation came in, because how fast it came in would determine how many more people it was shared with and how like potentially it might spread. And so social media really trained me to desire that instantaneous affirmation. And because it's just likes, it's purely affirmation. Now, as Caitlin, you just shared, like many people also get the other side of this, which is like doxing, backlash, horrible comments. And I was never extremely trolled, but I did get more than one. And so I think that my tiny experiences of that like also showed me it's not only affirmation, but I think that for so many of us, it's just like we're watching the likes and like that is what we're trained. We get that validation. In podcasting, you don't get that. So again, like it can often feel very lonely. It can feel like nobody's listening to you, even if the download numbers tell you people are listening to you. And I hear from a lot of my podcasters who want the feedback. They're like, I can't keep doing this if I'm not getting something back from my listeners. And we build in ways to create that. So you all have your Patreon. I've built my own like membership communities and things like that to engage listeners and be with them. And I think that what comes with that space, once you can kind of unhook from the need for the instant validation, is a lot of the different like freedoms that you both have mentioned in this conversation. Like you have the space to be messy. You have the space to think something through. There's also more space between when you record it and when it goes live. Like it just takes more time. So you can edit something, you can change something, you can tell a story and take it back. I mean, not to like be too behind the scenes, but that's happened when we were editing together, right? Like you'd record something and then you'd be like, can you like cut out that story, please? I don't want to talk about my, I don't know, whatever, ex, mom, friends, whoever it might be, right? Like we all do, I do this too. Like I'll tell a weird story about my parents and be like, oh, I don't need to tell a story about my parents. So I think that that is also another gift we can give ourselves is that space to like reflect on what we've said before it's going out to a public audience. And then I also just find that even though the feedback may be less, when we do get it, it's so much more thoughtful through podcasting because people have to find a way to contact you. There isn't that immediate like comment button. And also they have to listen to you to get it. And so they have to spend that time with you. They have to hear you talk it through. And there is more space for nuance, more space for messiness. There's the sort of encouragement or request that people really listen through the whole thing. And then there's space for you to like edit before it goes live and for people to think about what they want to say before they reach out to you. And all of that, I think, is really good for our critical thinking abilities and our relationship building abilities. And those are just some of the reasons I love podcasting.
The slowing down piece of it feels important. Again, and maybe this is unique to the kinds of platforms that Caitlin and I have had, or maybe it's just unique to me, but that need to like comment as soon as you know about something, or not comment, but like share, or like the immediacy of reaction is so heavy and pressing. And I do think there is something that it just feels delicious to me about a much slower rhythm and space between when we record and when we share something. It's like built into how we have conversations. So that feels very good to me too. And it's so funny to have you name the not feedback piece of it, because it is like so in the forefront, especially at the beginning. It was like, oh, it's just you and me, Caitlin, out here. Like, I don't know that this is meaning anything to anybody.
This part is so interesting to me because we've had completely different experiences on this. And this is not... Sometimes I'm just naturally prone to something that I think other people have to work towards. And I just want to name that I'm not working towards this. It just fucking comes easy to me. But, or it just is, it's just naturally how I move through the world. But like, I have never, not that like numbers, I recently hit 10K on Instagram and I was like, oh, interesting. But like overall, the numbers, the comments, the seeing, I don't go back and refresh to see who's commented on my posts. I often like miss comments. I'm like really bad at responding to DMs. People will comment and I just like don't even respond to them, which I feel bad about. But I have never, Instagram has not been a space for validation for me, which is feels really weird. I'm going to sit with that and think on it longer. But I don't think that it has ever been the space for me. It has been where I have documented my work. It has been a mini website. It has been a little, it's like, it feels so much my own space and like fuck anyone who is there that, like, if you're not here for it, like, I literally don't give a fuck. This is my thing. This is my space. I have created it for myself, which is how I've always felt about Instagram until my book when I really felt pressure to promote it, which it also was like, well, didn't really do anything. But I feel like my relationship to Instagram has shifted a lot since the book came out a year ago. And like the year ahead of that, like I changed my handle to be in line with the book title. I really started thinking about it as a strategy and marketing. And it, in the very beginning of the conversation, I wrote, I used to use social media to document my art, and now I make art for it. And as we've been talking, I feel like my brain is exploding because I'm like, I think a lot of, there's another side of social media that is detrimental to me, which I'll talk about in a second. But the thing that has shifted that has made social media not feel good is I feel like I'm creating for it. And before, like a couple years ago, that was never how I engaged with it. I did not create media for social media. I used social media to like where to document and place the work that I was making in the world. And that has shifted. And some of it, I think, was having a kid and I was just creating less work in the same way. And some was that I was trying to perform as a brand.
Yeah, you went from being an artist to being a content creator.
And it changed how I create because I like limit myself because I'm like, oh, maybe that. And I'm questioning whether something is like in line with my brand, which is like, what the fuck? I don't even have a brand. I just like have little fifis and I make art about them and I post them online. Like, that's what it is. The end.
I love this. It's like Caitlin Metz. I don't have a brand. I just have feelings.
I just have feelings. I don't know what you want from me. Like, I don't have time for this. So, okay, guys, I'm having a moment. I'm having an idea. I'm challenging myself that I am only going to post to document something that I make. Anything that I post on social media from now until, I don't know, this is half-baked. I just am having this idea. Is going to be just documenting something that tangibly, actually, physically exists in the world. So if I create something digitally, I have to like make it physical. I have to print it. I have to make it a thing. And then I can document that and post it. And I am going to create a project for myself where I am making art and documenting it, not creating content for social media. The problem I'm having with social media right now is I am using it to numb out. I'm scrolling and I'm not actually seeing what anyone's posting. I'm in like the For You page. I'm just like mindlessly taking in content and it's shifting how I feel about things. And that is the part that I am like, I had a dry January and it really reframed my understanding of why, when I was experiencing discomfort and when I was reaching for wine to numb a feeling. And I realized how much I shifted to using social media over having a glass of wine. And so what I am trying to figure out for myself is how do I stop scrolling? How do I stop just like grabbing the app and using it as like a numbing agent and how to just go back and using it as this like tool to document?
I really appreciate you sharing all of this, Caitlin, because I also think that there's so many different lenses that we can look at our social media use and our relationship to social media through. And I'm always trying to be out here like, choose your own adventure, right? Like for me, anxious attachment and codependency, that was the lens that like really made everything super clear. For you, Caitlin, it sounds more like numbing out and dissociating is like the lens that makes it clear. For other people, addiction is very much the lens that they need to understand their relationship to social media. And this is just like another place that I want to push the like multiplicity. Like if you're feeling bad on the app, it's worth trying to figure out why that's the case with yourself. And something you may have heard one of us say here may really like elucidate that for you, or it may not. You may have a totally different reason. Like we haven't talked about other really common ones I hear, like compare and despair or FOMO. Like there are all sorts of different ways we experience social media and ways that it can impact our lives on and offline. And what made me realize I had to get off the apps, like that may not be true for you, or you may be having a great time there. If you are, I'm not quite sure why you listened to all this episode, but but if you are, like that can be okay too. I think there are these broader trends of discontent on social media, but like what exactly any one person's looks like will be unique to like your brain, your body, your feelings, your experience, your place in the world, just like anything else.
I love this choose your own adventure and like thinking back to this, there's always a third way. And to get really nuanced about it, I think something that where I come in conflict with thinking about social media is because there are some really distinct positives to it that I'm not ready to give up. I'm not interested in that. And I also know, feel like the landscape of it is really shifting. So like with my clients that I work with, where my whole job is to run their social media, we're actively working on like, how are other ways that we're building community? Because I don't know what this app is about to do or if it's going to still be here. And that would be devastating. So what I'm trying to do is figure out what are the qualities, the attributes of it that are positive. How do I want to keep using them there? And then also, how do I want to foster those off that platform? And maybe even use the platform as a vehicle to do those things.
Yeah, I think that that's what it is for me, is that it feels like the landscape has shifted. Like, Amelia, the way that you described the validation part is a big part of it for me also. But I think like when I think about comments, it doesn't feel like it's just validation. It feels like it used to feel like it was community. It used to feel like we were thinking things through together. It used to feel like a space that we moved through more slowly. And I think, Caitlin, like I would check the comments obsessively, not necessarily just for validation, but sort of as like a sense of community, like being with people, feeling seen and understood, or trying to see or understand someone else. So I would like respond to every comment because that felt like part of what was beautiful about being there. I had to turn my DMs off because I couldn't keep up with it. It was too painful not to respond to every comment because I wanted to and I couldn't. And so, but what I have felt is that the way that I had used it, the space, doesn't exist anymore. At least I can't find it or experience it there. And so just to speak to that as another layer or dimension is that like part of it is that I think that that space has changed over time in what it actually is or how people use it or how the algorithms shape things. And so that is part of that curiosity too of like, well, if this space continues to evolve, doesn't offer the things that it used to that I really got, where are the other ways that we can facilitate that?
And that just speaks to our personalities too, because I'm like, no one talk to me, no one look at me. I want to be famous, but secretly so.
And I'm like, I want to sit down for coffee with every single one of you. Let's dig in.
Please, God, no. Leave a kind review and leave me the fuck alone. I'm so tired. I'm so overwhelmed.
Amelia, this has been wonderful. Like, you are offering all of us and in all the other mediums and spaces that you occupy, like, I think that you are just offering something that is so needed and like calming our nervous systems down as we try to imagine the third thing, the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh thing, other ways of moving through the world, imagining outside of the tiny little binary boxes and that we've been given. So, oh, your generosity of exploring all of this with us as we rambled and bumped around through a huge conversation. Thank you so, so much. I think we would love to hear from our listeners if you want to participate in this conversation. Like, I think I imagine that a lot of us are feeling a lot of different things about social media these days. And I would love to know all of it. Caitlin, I'll report back to you maybe.
I enjoy reading, but I love all the comments. Please comment if that feels good to you. And Rebecca will reply. Like, what is the positive and what, where you talked about, Amelia, like, what is the problem that you're going to solve? Then what are the other solutions? Like, and like, what is the problem that social media is presenting you, like, to you? And also, what is it solving for you? Because I have two of those that are really distinct. And what then you were like, how does it make you feel? And then what are the pros and cons of all the thing? I feel like we need to make a little flow chart because you said that so well.
And I want to know about people's, what their like little library that they're building is, or what are the t-shirts that you're wearing or the flags you're putting up? Like, what are the things?
Yeah. What are you seeing in your local news? What's on your local newspaper?
There's so many things we want to know. So we will keep talking about this, of course, because it seems present of mind in almost every conversation we're having these days. But this was so grounding. So I want to say the word inspiring, which is not my favorite word, but just like generative. Like, I'm thinking about so many things I want to do and be in the world and move through this in a different way. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We love you.
Thank you both so much. This was such a pleasure.
Bye.
You tell me when we're done, okay?
Bye.
Woohoo!
This podcast is edited and perfected by Amelia of Softer Sounds.
For all the show notes and a transcript of today's episode, check out our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast. This is our hub. It's where you can join the conversation and be part of our community.
If today's episode resonated with you or made you think of someone, share it.
And if you want to support the pod and also make us glow inside, go give a 5-star review on Apple. That would be so lovely.
Thank you for being here, for listening, for being a part of this community.
We love you so much.